Hey, most of us go ahead and put our email and everything else out in the cloud. Well, why not? But did you ever think about the fact that that really increases your attack surface? And if you don't have a way to have visibility and insight, as well as do something about it, you're at increased risk. So stick around. You're going to want to hear this show. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. I'm your host, G. Mark Hardy, and today I have a special guest, Rajan Kapoor, and we're going to talk all about things such as cloud workspace security. This is something really important. This is one of the episodes that you really want to bug out early on because almost every entity out there is probably got something that is at risk. And we're going to talk about those things. And more importantly than just talking about risk, we're going to talk about ideas, how to go ahead and solve them. So Rajan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here. It's a topic that I'm excited to talk about. Plus I get to spend some time with you.
Yeah, exactly. So you're VP of security, material security, and you guys are a unified detection and response platform for cloud workspace. Okay, that sounds like a big mouthful. So let's turn that into common terms. I'm using Google Workspace or Microsoft 365. As compared to having a Outlook server in my basement running Windows 2003 server or something like that. I probably want to be talking to you, right?
Yeah, it's 2025, so please stop running servers in your basement and let Google and Microsoft, the fine folks over there, do that for you. But yeah, that is a lot of words, right? But it's just a really long way of actually describing a problem, which I like to call managing like cloud workspace security is hard. And it's made harder by the products that we use today. You're either on Microsoft or Google, and those products don't give you everything you need to effectively manage the entire attack surface area of a cloud workspace.
And that's probably no surprise because it's why we have so many cybersecurity tools in our inventory, because although the Microsoft and Google do a great job of providing their core services, there's all these other things we think about. Like, hey, why did they think about that? And why do they think about that? And anybody who's worked in a large organization understands the dynamics. And that's basically when you're a startup or you're a smaller company, the best advantage you've got, and by the way, for anybody thinking about starting up a company, remember this, is not having any customers. And it sounds stupid. It sounds backwards. But it means you're not beholden to somebody for ideas that you maybe no longer want to support, or you have to go ahead and put the bulk of your time. So if you're working for a large corporation, you walk in the door and you say, hey, boss, I got this great idea. I'm like, yeah, but where's your deliverable that's due tomorrow? Okay, fine. So the great ideas never really get there, but you guys have been working on some great ideas, but you haven't been a VP of security material forever. What did you do before that? What got you on your career track? Because I think you also went through a role as CISO at some point. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I haven't had the official title of CISO yet, but I've definitely led security and IT organizations for longer than I like to admit, over 20 years. Started in IT when those fun on-prem servers were a thing that we were just talking about earlier, and then lived through the cloud transition, right? And it was great. You, as a security team, don't have to manage infrastructure anymore. You don't have to worry about vulnerability, mitigations, and it allowed us to free up our time to go work on actual security stuff. But it also, I lived through, like, we lost a lot of control over our data when that was happening, right? And then I landed at Dropbox, which was a massively scaled, consumer-facing cloud service provider, learned a whole lot there. And that's actually where I met the co-founders of Material and joined Material about 5 years ago, because this vision of changing the way we secure cloud office workspaces, making it easier, taking all the repetitive stuff that people do, it was pretty compelling to me. And so I've just been an early employee here and been helping build the company. And I like to call myself the customer in residence now. If I wasn't working at Material, I'd be a buyer of Material. So it's really great to be here and impact the product and the company.
I'd never heard that before, but I like that. I might remember that one. Customer in residence, because you're really kind of a fan of this. And of course, you've been here for 5+ years, so that means that you guys aren't new on the block. But really, I think what's happening and the business problem that we want to address, and why I invited everybody to just keep listening on the show, is the risk landscape has shifted, you said, in the cloud landscape. In particular, email. It's going to be your primary attack vector, I would think, even if I'm cloud first, because a lot of these sophisticated attacks are going to bypass these protections. We set them up kind of like chess pieces fixed in location. And then the attackers kind of worked their way around by saying, hey, prove you're a human to a Windows R, Control V, Enter. And boom, you just uploaded a PowerShell script that's going to start lateral movement or something like that. But what are other types of threats that are out there other than just, for example, email? Because it's not just monolithic.
Yeah, there's a whole number, right? I mean, you name it, we got it, right? So you have like OAuth apps, right? Like these apps get a ton of permissions into your accounts and they can do a lot of stuff. They can do a lot of damage. But it's not just a malicious app you have to look out for. You have to look out for supply chain attacks. There was Sales Drift that happened, that happened a few months ago. And that was an app that was basically, you know, a valid business application that then was popped, right? And now you had all of these like installs of OAuth apps looking at accounts, pulling data out of them, right? And so that's one vector. Social engineering or insider threat continues to be a vector, right? Endpoint viruses, endpoint malware, you know, endpoints being popped. There's a ton of ways into these accounts that don't require email or phishing to get into them, right? And we keep seeing that. And we are actually seeing the attackers pivot. It's interesting.
Yeah. In fact, we're doing our job almost too well in the way that we've gone ahead and we set up effective defenses. That's one of the things to think about is that we often have a scorecard about what do we have and how many products and do they overlap, but not too much because we're wasting money. But if you have a chink in the armor, there's a way to go through. So the thing is, though, from my perspective, we want to protect our endpoints, so we get an EDR or an XDR, and then we got our network. So I need, SaaS, SASE, and then cloud. I got to have a cloud security posture management and things like that. But I think what's probably missing, though, is something that just kind of stitches all this together, and it goes across the whole attack framework. You identify, protect, detect, respond, recover, course governance over the whole thing and stuff like that. So if we're looking at trying to put you in a bucket, because everybody wants to put you in a bucket that Gartner has defined, what bucket do you think you fit in? Or maybe you do, because I don't know if you're on a magic quadrant or not. We haven't talked about that.
What's the quote? Nobody puts baby in a bucket, you know. But yeah, so, you know, the EDR, you know, before I answer that bucket question, the EDR journey actually is really appropriate to talk about here. If you think about endpoint protections, right? We first started out with like antivirus software, you know, back in like the late 90s and early 2000s, because viruses were a thing. Then the attackers, you know, they're like, well, let's also try like getting in through the network just directly through vulnerabilities that we find in the operating system or different applications. So, you know, like firewalls became a thing on endpoints, right? So now you've got network controls, you've got, you know, like operating system level or file system, you know, system level controls. You just, but then like there was still like just weird stuff that could happen, right? Or other ways to get in. And, you know, like, and so he started writing like detections on process stuff going weird, right? And then this like little company came along and it was like, well, now we're running like a bunch of stuff, including like off the shelf and custom stuff on these endpoints. Let's just put it all in one package, because it's really hard to stitch these things together and understand if something bad is actually happening on an endpoint. And that company was called CrowdStrike, right? And so you see the EDR space today and you see how instead of buying like five or six or seven different services, people are buying one or two now. And majority of them are just buying, you know, that EDR service from CrowdStrike. That's what we're doing for workspace security, for cloud office security. Everyone's using a ton of tools today to help with, you know, data loss prevention, to help with threat detection in accounts, to help with threat detection in email, right? And we want to bring all of that together in one place so that you can start to see the attack chain in one place. You can catch it earlier. You can reduce the dwell time. And if you're doing an investigation, you aren't spending all this time trying to stitch data sources together from these like siloed services. Everything is one place and your team can just move more quickly and do more, in less time.
Yeah, because we can't necessarily get lots of extra people. That's one of the scaling problems that we say, well, hey, if we can find the people and then if we get the budget for them, well, that's great. And often when I'm doing live speaking engagements, like, anybody here have an unlimited cybersecurity budget? Because I'd love to be your CISO or at least your consultant anyway, right, and help you spend it. There's ways to do it. But of course, that's not true. That doesn't happen anywhere. But if we go back to looking at the technologies, because I think ultimately that's going to be key. We had gone from technical solutions that attackers have been able to breach and circumvent by using the users as a way to say, hey, hold the digital door open. But now we're back again to say, okay, beyond just user education and training, and that's a whole different subject, we can build a better mousetrap, so to speak. We can actually go ahead and have some modern workspace security platform and things like that. So what type of capabilities are going to be in that type of environment? What do we look for if we're saying, hey, I don't want to buy 20 different things. I want to have a much smaller number, but where do I get that?
Sure. Let me walk you through an attack chain, right? And that really illustrates this very well, right? So you have your traditional email security service, right? That would tries to find like those phishing emails or the, you know, those emails with malware. Let's say that one comes in and it bypasses the filters and, you know, like, or it doesn't, there's nothing to filter because it's just like a call to action of, hey, it's your CEO, text this number, right? They text the number, they are sent a link, they download whatever's on that link, and now they've installed some sort of malware, or malicious OAuth app on their account, right? At this point, your email security service doesn't help you any further. Right. Because like the breach is occurring and it's outside of the mailbox. It's, you know, account access. Right. It started with the mailbox, but now you've moved to the account, you know, writ large. And everything that happens after this, if you have traditional tooling, you're going to another tool now, or you're going to your SIM, or you're going to like try and like, you know, find out what happens next somewhere else. But wouldn't it be great if instead of having to leave, you know, your email security tool, you could just start to look at other detections on that account, right? For example, hey, like this, there's been a novel login from an IP address that's on a network that's known to be used by North Korean attackers, right? Like that would be a really good thing to piece together as part of the puzzle, right? And then you see, oh, this like malicious OAuth app has just been installed. Oh, and this app is now accessing and taking out a whole bunch of data from that account, right? And piecing all of that together today is almost impossible for most teams. They just don't have the resources. You talked about scale earlier, right? Like it's about scale and maturity, right? It's about doing more with less, but having more mature capabilities, and detection and response is all about maturity. The more mature you are, the better detections you have, and the faster your team can investigate those detections and come to a conclusion.
Yeah, you said the magic word, faster. I was waiting for time element to be in there because ultimately you can go ahead and identify, the faster you identify, the faster you can go ahead and potentially stop or limit the damage an intruder can do. But it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to find, say like, well, hey boss, 3 weeks ago at Sunday night at 1:42 is when we really went bankrupt. So, you know, looking at the logs as we go through there, is that terribly helpful? So what we find then is that instead of having all these different things, now there might be some effort to say, hey, let's create a single pane of glass, and then we're going to put some synthesis of all these different tool sets out there. But that doesn't seem to be the best approach because, first of all of these vendors don't play well with others. Secondly, the APIs aren't really designed to go ahead and provide for that common interface. And so we've been stuck with this, look at this tool, look at that tool, look at that tool, and have all these screens. And then you end up doing what I've got here. I've got a 49-inch monitor in front of me and a 24-inch monitor over here. And that's still maybe sometimes not enough to get everything up there. So what we're doing then is we're moving from the piecemeal approach to a more of a interface. What are the trade-offs for that? Do we give up a certain amount of visibility, or saying, well, hey, I can do that, but I can only see half of what I would have seen? Or can I tune this in a way where I'm just dropping out the stuff, the noise, I don't care, because I might get an alert here, but if it never gets to here, maybe I don't care. You know, there's something banging at the window, but it didn't get into my living room. So maybe you let it bang on the window. Is that how you guys solve that?
Yeah. So there's trade-offs to doing the siloed solutions for sure, right? And that is very much like, are you able to stitch it all together? And most teams aren't, right? There's another trade-off with using a siloed solution, which is automatic remediations, right? Like you, and this is part of scaling, right? Like if you have something that pulls it all together, you can then confidently like say, hey, if you see these sets of actions occurring, take this action. So going back to the example I was giving earlier, like just roll that account, right? Like without like page someone in the SOC to come and like take a look, or page someone in the security team to come and take a look and start the investigation, but don't wait for a human to take an action to like disable that account. Like it's time, right? And that will reduce that dwell time. Conversely, though, I don't want to act like everything's like, you know, rainbows and unicorns once you bring everything together, because the most common question we get is, well, what about all my other services, right? Like these siloed solutions that I have go look at my other services. And my response to that, though, is like, yes, you have this one tool that is focused specifically on cloud workspace security. And we're not going broad. We are just going very, very, very deep. But the truth is, like, these cloud workspace surface areas are very, very, very like target-rich environments for attackers. And it's what they're going for at the end of the day. So like I might not be scanning like your Salesforce account or your Box account or another service that you're using in your organization, but at the end of the day, the attackers are really more focused on like on Google Workspace versus Salesforce, because that's where like they know they can launch further attacks. That's where they know all of your corporate data is. That's where they know that like that sensitive information in the mailboxes is hard to control. So I actually don't see it as like a limitation. I think it's really like it's by design, like just get super focused on this one surface area and like help make that a more secure environment to operate in.
Yeah, that makes really good sense, because I've got clients that work as a CISO where we've got everything up in Microsoft. I run the Google environment, my business. And although they're different tools and they're different capabilities, and you know, you have to develop fluency in two things. And if the company does a merger or an acquisition, or you go from one organization to another, we sometimes see this where at the CISO level, someone comes into a new position, they say, "I'll give me a tool inventory." And you're like, "Well, we got these 50 different tools." And you're like, "Well, those aren't the ones I had in my last job, and these are the ones I like. So rip those out and stick these in there," which is, of course, a lot of wasted time and money and effort, because it's just personal preference. And it might be that the tools that are already there are quite capable of doing what they're doing. But in a way, what I think you're offering is for somebody who listens and gets the message, which we're talking about, have this unified type of approach where I can see what's going on. It's not just a little narrow focus on one area of my enterprise. But I can see that, then it helps me go ahead and address the redundancy problems or look at inefficiencies. For example, so my co-host Ross Young just published a book this past month called Cybersecurity's Dirty Secret, Why Most Budgets Go to Waste. And it's got great content in it. So I get a little plug for it. I don't get any money when he plugs his book, but it's really good. And he's got a chapter that he likes that talks about we should do something called a murder board, which means take all these different applications that you've got and bring them up one at a time, and then get a bunch of people around there and says, prove to me why we can't live without this.
Right.
What could you do if you didn't have it? And then now what you're finding then is a lot of times we've inherited the legacy. And so I would suggest that for a lot of us, our tool sets are like our sock drawer. We've got all kinds of different socks in there. And some of these things, yeah, I got it from a vendor. It was free. It's green, but yeah, I'll save it for St. Patty's Day. But 364 days a year, I'm not going to wear green socks. And then as a result, and someone gets lost. So you've got something that's part installed, but nobody remembers the logins, but it's still got connections and things like that. So when you talk to prospective customers as the customer in residence, what is it that you find that resonates with them? What is it that makes people say, yeah, this message makes good sense? What aha moment occurs when they get there?
Yeah, it's super early on, right? I do want to take your sock metaphor a little too far and say that some of the socks get holes in them, and we'll call those toe vulnerabilities. But it resonates super early, which is like just managing cloud workspaces, cloud office environments it's hard. You spend a lot of time doing manual stuff, and your team is like really like, you know, they're not getting to like the real security work because they've got to like fight these like, you know, terrible controls and UIs or confusing settings or like, you know, or ingesting like, you know, logging themselves and building their own detections. And that's just something that should, in my opinion, should have been part of the product to begin with. Like, I think what we're building is really just like what should have been there to begin with. And so the aha moment comes pretty quickly with it when, you know, we talk about scale, we talk about maturity, we talk about like, you know, improving your posture just with the resources you already have today. So it's not really a hard sell. And then I think in terms of what you were talking about earlier, like the, you know, like let's get a flashlight and shine a light on all the services we have. There's the best way in my experience to do that has been leveraging the different frameworks out there, like the MITRE framework for cloud office security. That's a thing that exists, right? Put it up on a board, take all your services, put them, you know, into the different like tactics, you know, put them next to the different tactics that they're meant to like mitigate, right? Or protect attacks against, and then see what's overlapping, right? Because you're going to find a lot of overlap, right? And wherever you start to get this like heat map of like, you know, like apps overlapping in one area, figure out what you can rip out, figure out what you can simplify, because there's actually, I believe, like complexity increases your security risk.
Well, as Bruce Schneier said that years ago, complexity is the enemy of security. So is convenience. But I think I'll give Bruce credit for both of those.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're actually getting to a place where convenience isn't necessarily an enemy. Like you look at passkeys, right? Like passkeys are super convenient and really, really secure, right? So like, but
you don't have to carry this thing around anymore.
Exactly, exactly. Or remember your passwords or whatever, right? You just you know, touch ID in your target account, right? But I will not argue with Bruce. He's a giant when it comes to thinking about security. So, but that's just my, I think the ease of security is starting to become a thing. But yeah, like the more things that your team has to worry about, the more things that your team has to maintain, the more, you know, data sources that your team has to ingest, all of that just creates, you know, more opportunities for a gap or some sort of, you know, risk to appear.
That's a good insight. Now, you go. We'll keep that sock metaphor one more time. And oh, by the way, all my socks have a hole in them. That's where I put my foot.
At least one hole, right?
Well, yeah, touche on that one. But I did a rip and replace last year. I donated every sock I owned to somebody who kind of needed them. And then I went ahead and I bought a pack of 10 black pairs of socks from Sam's Club, and I got 10 pair of white socks, and that's it. So I can go to my sock drawer at 3 a.m. without a pack for a road trip, and I know any socks I grab will always match. Now, that is, I'm kind of using that as a metaphor for a more mature security program that has gone through. They've inventoried their tools. They've removed the redundancy. They've gotten rid of the ones with the holes and things like that. But at that point, they're still probably not idealized, right? When you run into an organization that says, well, we're mature, we know what we're doing, where do you find the point that gets them to go, oh yeah, I really need to listen more to what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Like the companies that like have invested and they have all this tooling and they think, you know, that they've got a handle on everything. The first thing I'll bring up is like, well, like, you know, what's the cost for all of that? Like how much value for, you know, compared to the cost of what you're spending? Like, could you be doing this more efficiently? Could you be doing this in a more cost-effective way? Could you free up your team to go do all that stuff that's on your punch list that you just don't get time to get to because you've got all, you know, you have a lot of either KTLO or just a lot of like your tools just demand a lot of care and feeding, right? And so that would be the conversation I'd have with teams that are mature. I mean, good for them, really. Like maturing your security program is like why we all exist as security leaders, right? Like that we need to just get better and better and better every year. But like we saw, you know, 2 years ago, for the first time in my experience, the security industry went through a massive downturn. Budgets were cut, team members were, you know, let go of, unfortunately. And it was happening across the board, right? And I think it was a real wake-up call for security organizations and security leaders in general who were like, hey, like, yeah, the faucet can get turned on and off. And like, what do I do? How do I, like, I talked to a lot of security leaders at the time who were struggling because they had built out these large, complex security programs. And they were getting value, but they weren't getting as much value as they could have been. And so when came time to cut, managing everything that they'd put in place became super, super, super hard. So that's what I would say to those leaders is like, you know, are you, you know, I'm glad you matured your security program, But are you doing it in the most cost-effective way? Are you getting as much value from it? And value isn't just about cutting costs, but like, are you getting as much value from what you have in place as you could be?
Yeah, and I think one of the things we look at is particularly if budgets get tighter in the coming year, and we've had, as you say, we've had some good years and we had some lean years, is I go back to some of my military experience where they say, okay, well, Congress, who really is not looking at your specific line item, has just issued this and it trickles down and you say, you need to do a 10% cut. All right. So what do you, we can't fire people in the military because it's not, you don't control that. You can't cut their salaries. Well, you can't control that. You can't put a tank up for sale and put it on eBay saying we need to raise a little bit of money to keep our tank battalion going. So you then have to kind of squeeze it out of operations, maintenance, and things like that. And a lot of times that deferral becomes the maintenance. We say, all right, fine, we're going to not do the stuff we're supposed to do, which of course sets kind of a little time bomb for things are going to break sooner because you haven't done it. And that's not necessarily a military, but a business issue as well. You have an organization that's running well. You bring in some new director, some new manager. The manager says, hey, I'm going to make my numbers look great. So we're going to cut back on maintenance. We're going to cut back on all this stuff like that. Profitability goes way up. And everybody says, this guy's a genius. Let's promote him. Well, he promotes. The next poor guy comes in just as everything is falling apart. Because it's you've been running your engine now and you haven't changed the oil in 15,000 miles and it's nothing but black sludge. And because you didn't need the money here, you're not getting it. And then all of a sudden, this whole thing falls apart and they say, wow, this guy did amazing things. But you've got to look at the what happens afterwards. So it kind of brings up the question of ROI, return on investment. And that's really a lot of times when we're going ahead as CISOs and trying to talk to a budget committee or the like, we can't just say, well, I need this because. Well, it's great, but they might say we got a 10% cut and your becauses don't work. But if I can say I can improve the profitability of the business by applying this tool effectively, I'm going to sit up and take notice. Well, how do I do that? So in this particular situation, you and I know, and a lot of our people listening to the show know, the security professionals, what we are is we are the not necessarily a guarantor, but they were an enabler for the organization's profitability. And if even it's a government or a nonprofit for the ability to do revenue, we protect revenue. And if we weren't for us, people would be stealing from us. Things would be crashing all left and right and center. People would own our information. We'd be facing all kinds of compliance problems and the like. How do we put together a cohesive, if you will, business argument on ROI to say, what do we do? Is it incident reduction? Can we turn that into money? Can we talk about dwell time for an attacker going down? Can we turn that into money? Time to remediate the exposure of risk? Or do we have to go back to basic things such as, well, we're not going to get fined by the SEC this year if we do it right?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? And this goes back to, you know, there's a couple of ways. There's a couple of ways to do this. I actually have a lot of thoughts about this, so I'm glad you brought it up. The first is, you know, going back to that framework I was talking about earlier, right? You know, you kind of like use them as a map, use these frameworks, pick a framework, pick a couple of frameworks, use them as maps for maturity. But then if you can demonstrate that you are continuously driving more maturity for your security organization and then measure that against cost and then use that as a benchmark for the rest of like what the industry is spending on achieving that maturity, right? That's a great way to like demonstrate that, hey, we're improving. Yes, it costs money. But look, compared to our peers, we're being more responsible and being more effective with that spending, right? So that's one way. There's a second piece here, which I don't think is exactly what you're asking, but I'm going to grab the opportunity to talk about it. And the second piece has to do with risk for the organization overall, which does tie back to like, you know, company health and can tie back to company profitability. And what I mean by that is as security organizations, we're kind of the gatekeepers very often for whether other parts of the organization can do things with data or, you know, do things that have a security implication or not, right? And I don't think we do a great job today as security organizations of partnering with those businesses and understanding what the business outcomes are that they're trying to achieve. And so this is another way that security teams, and this is totally tangential to what we've been talking about, so I appreciate you bearing with me here, but like if the marketing team comes and asks your data security team for access to a whole bunch of data because they want to run like this like campaign over the next quarter, like the very first question we ask is like, well, what data do you want? But like the first question we should probably ask as security leaders is, hey, what's the business outcome you're looking for here, right? And then when they tell you the business outcome, be like, okay, what are they like, how are you measuring that outcome? Like, what is like your KPI? What's your dashboard to tell you that that's working? And we don't ask that either. And then once they give us that information, we can say, okay, what is the least amount of data over the least amount of time that you can work with to demonstrate to us and demonstrate to yourselves that your hypothesis is actually accurate and that the business outcomes that you're expecting are happening? Let's go do that. Like, let's go, like, if you need, you're asking me for like 3 million, like, you know, customer records so you can go do a campaign, but you're telling me you can probably prove this with like 10,000 records over like 3 months. Let's go do that, right? And then let's do a check-in together, right? So I think there's two ways that security organizations can help keep companies healthy and can help drive revenue. And so I'll bring it back now to our world, which is, you know, like mature, make sure you're, you know, spending as little as possible to do that maturity, benchmark yourself, and then just go and talk to your executive team and kind of lay this out for them.
Yeah, we're becoming the department of how, not the department of no. And I think that's key. Now, what you want to make sure, though, is that you build relationships, because when you start asking those questions, somebody at some point can say, well, I'm just going to call your boss and make you do it, because they have to understand that what you're really trying to help them become is successful. And you say, look, I want you to be successful in your goal with at the least risk to the organization. So, hey, I need to do some vibe coding here in marketing. Give me global admin so I don't have any problems in getting access to the data I want. It's like, no. That's a really bad idea,
right?
You know, using an extreme example, if you will, or something like that. But I think we get it. So what you're suggesting then is that, armed with the capability to be able to discern these insights, to take a look across multi-cloud platforms, potentially, or definitely in our cloud platform, to distill that into actionable decision-making and sometimes automated decision-making to do security, is that then we take a business leadership role in cybersecurity, which is, I'm saying that very specifically because we're often viewed negatively as a cost center, but now we're saying, we're going to get you there. We're going to get you there at the lowest possible risk, within reason, of course, and you're not going to spend a whole lot of time and money and effort doing it, because you might boil the ocean and find out that nothing was there that you wanted. You didn't find any elephants in the boiled ocean. Well, that was the wrong place to look.
That's right.
But if you go ahead and you boil out a pond and you're like, yeah, there's nothing there, maybe they won't be anywhere else, you do better on that. So I like that concept. I think it
was
well worth.
And you didn't find any elephants in the ocean, but meanwhile, like, the service provider that the marketing team was working with got popped, and now you have a breach on your hands, right? Like,
yeah.
It's even worse than just like not finding your elephants in the ocean.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we do see that happening, because sophisticated attackers, I would say nation state attackers, are realizing that supply chain attacks scale very nicely, whether it's SolarWinds or whether going at something like Salesforce. And one of those tools, or the next one, which will be coming up. And I'm doing a talk tomorrow. I do a live presentation about once a month down here. And my talk is going to be on my security predictions for 2026. And one of the things is going to be, you're going to see a major breach. But the cause of the major breach is going to be an AI misconfiguration.
Mm.
Not that somebody went ahead and left buckets open on Amazon, or they posted their password in GitHub or whatever,
right,
but someone's
right.
going to go ahead. They're going to press the I believe button on AI, and it's going to do something, and nobody's going to catch that.
Yeah.
Back to our program already in progress. So in a multi-tenant.
Related to that is the use of AI in the enterprise right now. Is actually creating a whole bunch of data security risks, because you have like companies that they're like, hey, like, we'll go and like, you know, index all of the data across, you know, like your Google Drive, for example, right? And then you can just ask us questions and we'll go look for it. And they might not even be indexing, they'll just go look for it at the time you ask them. And if you have access to a document that has that data in it, it'll come back with that data. Well, imagine a scenario where someone in the HR department has to share payroll data because they're moving to a new payroll provider. They put it into a Google Sheet or into a doc or something, and they send it on over, but they click the setting to share this document publicly, or to share even this document to anyone in the organization, right? Well, if you ask, and I've tested this, like, if you ask and say, hey, what's your CFO salary, right? And there's a doc sitting around that has that information in it, like, the agent's not going to know you really shouldn't be looking at that data. The agent's going to say, hey, you have access to it. It's something that you could look at, and it brings it back for you. So I think there'll be a ton of like data breaches coming from AI as well because of these enterprise tools that are being put in place and because of misconfigured permissions on docs.
Yeah, and a lot of time, I mean, when we rolled out Copilot in one of my clients up in the DC area, one of the things we're really looking at carefully is what do we give it access to? How do we control it? Because if you just go ahead and say, hey, Copilot, be my best buddy, have access to everything I have access to, potentially you get yourself in trouble. What you don't want it to have is you don't want to be Bobby the intern having access to the entire enterprise and seeing everything that's on OneDrive. Because you didn't configure OneDrive correctly, or Bobby got added to some team when he was there as a starting out, and then you didn't revoke those permissions. Yeah. And these AI tools don't know about that. Now,
And then bringing this all back to like, well, you know, like how does that fit in today's conversation?
Yeah, which is exactly what was my question. So well done.
And that's exactly like the type of advantages you get from this like unified platform to do like to cover your work, your cloud office environment. And what I mean by that is like, so one of the things we'll do is we will scan your documents. We will look for sensitive data in those documents. We will look for how they're shared and enable security teams to automatically roll back shares on documents that have certain types of content in them. So for example, if you tell us every time you see payroll data with a public link in it, like remove that public share and notify the end user that they shouldn't share data that way, we can do that for you, right? But like that again is like, you know, ties back to like a breach in that if someone gets into your accounts, number one, like how are they able to move like internally to other like sources to data that's in your, you know, cloud office environment? What data could they potentially have accessed? Did they access that data? But like, let's not wait for the breach. Let's like reduce that surface area as much as possible ahead of time by putting in policies, and your email security tool just isn't going to do any of that for you. Right. So, that's a great example of like how having this one thing to cover the entire surface area starts to give you like superpowers when it comes to protecting your data, having good posture, and then like reducing the impact of a breach.
So you guys at Material have really built something specifically for the cloud workspace. You haven't like retrofitted something and said, well, hey, let's paint cloud on it. Or now, you know, today we're painting AI on things, but a few years back, we just paint cloud in front of something.
Yeah, no, that's what we built, right? And we're doing it by just going directly to Google and Microsoft's APIs and, you know, ingesting everything that we can get our hands on. And then turning that into like, you know, weapons that the security team can use defensively to protect their environments.
Now, one of the things I did in prepping for the episode, I poked around your website and looked around at things like that. And you had a customer success story. I don't necessarily want to pop it on you. I think one was from Headway, but apparently they said it's okay to refer to us. So for someone saying, okay, I think you got my attention. I do have this environment. It's up in the cloud. You've talked about 3 or 4 attack vectors that I probably can't prevent, let alone detect early enough to do something about it. What happened with those guys? What was the benefit that they experienced by working with you?
Yeah, I love the team at Headway, by the way. Zach, if you're listening, it's always great to chat with him and talk because they're doing some important stuff over there, right? Like mental health is important, and they're helping people get access to it. So I love that we can help them do that in a more secure way. They have a very lean team over there, a very capable but lean team. And like for them, the question wasn't like what can they do, because they're very capable. The question is like what do we have time to do? And when they saw Material, I hope I'm not putting words into anyone's mouths over there, but they told us when they saw us and they saw how we could do those two things I talked about earlier, help them scale and help them mature. We could help them, you know, instead of them sitting around writing detections to find stuff, they would just leverage our detections out of the box. Instead of them sitting around like remediating like, you know, alerts as they came in, they just configured us to go and do the remediations automatically. And it spanned like the entire cloud office. They're on Google. So it spanned the entire Google workspace environment that they were using, everything from email security to account takeover alerts to data loss protection policies. These different programs that they would have had to have stood up and then invest in, they could just throw us at it and we were able to do it for them basically overnight.
So you're basically saying that you don't have to be a Fortune 5 to be able to utilize this tool set and get some value out of it.
Yeah, and that's the maturity piece of this, right? Like that, you know, when I talk about, and I keep saying it because I believe this so much, but like when I talk about scale maturity, the maturity piece is like, you know, like the like good detection and response, effective detection and response shouldn't be limited to like companies that have budgets of over like $10 million for like security, right? Like if you are a 4-5 person shop at a 200 person company, right? Like you need this just as much as everyone else. So like let's make it easier for you to obtain that.
That really sounds helpful because one of the things I face, one of my clients is a fairly small enterprise and we always end up with minimum licenses. I was looking at one particular tool. Oh yeah, I mean you can go down to 500. I said, we only have 500 people. We got less than 100. Well, you're going to pay 5x to get the coverage because that's all they do. And then it sounded like, though, that's not a problem with you guys and material. So as we're getting close to the end of the show here, Harajan, do you have any closing takeaway or a piece of advice that you'd like to have for people to prepare their workspace security strategy so they can say, hey, I need a sanity check. And if I'm thinking that there might be something that's not there, what should I do next?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think for a long time, organizations have like ignored the risks within workspace security. And it's the reason why it's become such a rich target environment for attackers. The attackers know where the gaps are. They know how powerful getting and taking over an account is. And they know that there's just a bunch of different ways in, and it's not just email, right? It's everything we talked about earlier in the show. It's supply chain attacks. It's, you know, malicious apps being installed. It's social engineering or just straight up bribing people, you know, and using insider as your attack vector. But like now is the time because the attackers are showing us time after time, they're showing us that their target is that cloud office environment. And once they're in there, it is really hard to recover. You know, dwell time can be very long. The way they use your own environment to launch further attacks against other organizations or within your organization is hard to stop once they're in. And really what you want to do is just like we do for everything, every other service that we run in our environments today, we want to get a handle on it. We want to improve the security posture of it. We want to clean it up. And we want to make sure that if something bad were to happen, we see it quickly, we shut it down quickly, and we know exactly what the impact was, and we minimize that impact ahead of time.
And I can't imagine anybody not wanting that. That would definitely be a positive characteristic to have. And although we could stitch together a little odds and ends and with a little bit of bubble gum and paper clips and anything else we can hold them together, we might be able to come up with some strategy that works. But I think it's a whole lot easier to be able to go ahead and do that. So for somebody who said, hey, this is awesome, I want to find out more, where's a good place for them to go? I know you've got some, you know, white papers out there and things like that, but where's the best place to go get more?
Yeah, first thing is find me on LinkedIn. Always happy to chat. Rajan Kapoor. If you search for me, you'll find me at Material Security. But then our website, we do a ton of interesting things. One of them is we even put our pricing up there. You know, a lot of companies don't do that. We have our pricing up there for large organizations. That's list pricing, so we'll talk. Just check out our website. We try and be very transparent, try to not use a lot of jargon, try and be very like straight with what we're doing. Let's have a conversation and would love to chat.
Well, this has been fascinating. I have learned something, and I hope that the listeners who follow my advice are still listening. If so, and you like CISO Tradecraft, give us a thumbs up, put something out on LinkedIn and let us know if you like this episode or if you want us to cover more information. You can definitely go ahead and contact Rajan. It's material.security is your website. I remember when the .security came out, they went like $3,000 to register a domain. I said, you guys nuts, I got a hold of the registrar. And they said, oh, well, we just figured that criminals wouldn't pay the $3,000. I said, they're going to use a stolen credit card, dude. Come on. That's not very good security. But you've got some great resources out there. We'll put that in the link for you, as well as probably a link to the MITRE firewall cloud office security that you had mentioned earlier. That's why I was taking some notes here and things like that. So for listeners out there, thank you for being part of a CISO Tradecraft audience. Hopefully we brought some useful material information to help you with your cybersecurity career. If it's work, let us know. If it doesn't work, well, let us know too, and we'll go ahead and we'll do other stuff for you. But I hope that everybody has a safe and happy holiday season. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy, with my guest, Roshan Kapoor. Until next time, stay safe out there.